This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by Andy Burke. Andy is with the Department of Commerce, and specifically, we're diving into the digital divide, talking about the broadband infrastructure program and how it applies to agriculture and rural America. That coming up in just a moment. First off, let's talk wheat. Dr. Seth Meyer is the chief economist at USDA.
We've had a second year of increases in wheat planted area. This year, obviously, as a response to what are very high wheat prices. And we're expected to hit 48 million acres of wheat on, you know, favorable new crop prices. Spring wheat could be limited. We continue to experience serious drought in the West. And winter wheat harvested area will remain an unknown with that those dry conditions. But planted area expected to be 48 million acres.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Andy Burke. Andy is Commerce Department Special Representative for Broadband. That's a mouthful, Andy, but I guess if we really wanted to break it down, what's that mean? What's that job title mean?
Well, President Biden has pledged to ensure that every American has access to a high-quality, affordable broadband connection. And there is widespread bipartisan support. So people from both sides of the aisle believe in this. And my job is to help take that dream or that pledge and turn it into reality. And we're seeing that happen before our very eyes.
Well, let's talk about something known as the Broadband Infrastructure Program. Maybe something that we've heard about or read those three words, but what really is that?
Well, in 2022, we know more than ever that to participate in the economy or school or to have a high quality of life, that an American needs a broadband connection. And so Congress has made this a priority. As I said, President Biden has said that this is one of the most important things that he can do. And the broadband infrastructure program is ensuring that we partner with states and communities to put the funding necessary to make sure that people have a usable, affordable connection. And that means you can upload things, you can download things. If you're on a farm, if you're in a hilly area, if you are in the middle of a city, no matter where you are, you can turn on that internet connection and make it work.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed because I'm actually on a rural broadband signal right now. So that really opens the door, though, to talk about a big announcement that Commerce Department made on Friday. And this really does cover quite a few, a large scope, quite a few different communities. What's happening?
Well, we have announced that we're going to put $12.7 million into a grant that will directly serve 5,254 households and 158 businesses in Sabine County. So this is critical for us to make sure that the 14% of Texas households who don't have a quality connection today, that they are able to access the internet going forward. This is, again, a big piece of delivering on that long-term promise to make sure everybody has a connection.
We talk about Texas, but when I look at the list of last-mile projects here, there's Georgia, there's Kentucky, there's Maine, there's Mississippi. Heck, we even jump out to Guam there. So this is wide-reaching, isn't it?
Unfortunately, Tony, every state and territory has a problem when it comes to people without connections. And so Texas is not different than other places. And as you start to see these dollars go out in the form of grants to places, we know that we're going to have to hit everybody. And again, it's bipartisan in nature. People from both sides of the aisle support it. And that's really because we need it everywhere. And I think that it's going to make a huge difference for those more than 5,200 households and all the people who live there in Texas now. And as we continue to grow out the people who are served, it's going to multiply out and more people are going to be able to participate.
Andy, there's a lot of money that's been set aside for broadband and rural broadband. But with this idea of trying to get it into every household, it seems as though the money's there and the want is there. How do we connect those two? What's the challenge?
It isn't easy. If it was easy, somebody else would already done it. So there are problems, as you know, a lot of people who live in rural areas right now don't have it. It's a long way to get to some people who live far out. There's issues because some people live in mountain areas or maybe even in a place where there's lots of water around them. And so there's all kinds of challenges with geography to get to people. And then we have to make sure that there is the capacity in terms of organization. So the partnerships between the federal government and the state, the local people and the providers to ensure that the connection gets there and also that it's affordable so that people can turn it on. It's not an easy project, but it is doable, and the president is committed to this, as well as members of both parties in Congress.
Andy, we're almost out of time, but I hate to talk about all the challenges without giving you the opportunity to talk about what you're most excited about. So that's the final one here. What keeps you going? What really makes you excited?
This is the most exciting time that we've ever seen to getting internet connections out to every person in the United States. And what I love, and I know this is something that the president is committed to, is people being able to control where they live and what they do. If you want to live out in rural Texas, great. If you want to live in the middle of the city, great. You shouldn't have a broadband connection based on where you live. You should have access to it in both places. So should the kids who need to go to school or the business that needs to connect. It is incredibly exciting to think about people having more power and opportunity to choose their own destiny based on the having a broadband connection.
Andy Burke is Commerce Department Special Representative for Broadband and joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Looking to get more out of your hay harvest? At Livingston Machinery, we're proud to offer Heston by Massey Ferguson wind rowers, disc mower conditioners, round balers, large and small square balers. These rugged machines are built for high performance and high capacity. They're simple to maintain and consistently deliver the best results. Don't settle for less. Demand Heston hay. Learn more at livingstonmachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack speaking at the recent USDA Ag Outlook Forum, talking about climate smart ag.
But it was also an opportunity for us to make an increased investment in the research necessary to advance climate smart agriculture. We started initially with the thought that maybe we could raise $3 billion of interest as a result of this partnership. Then President Biden challenged us to do $4 billion when he announced this initiative last year. And we felt confident enough that we could get to $8 billion. So we doubled the goal. We saw new sprint partners. We have a series of companies and entities that are investing hundreds of millions of dollars in innovative programs to try to accelerate the technologies and the innovations that are out there in this climate smart area. IBM came to the meeting and said, we want to be part of this. We want to commit $10 million over the course of the next several years to work with entities like the Nature Conservancy, Heifer International, to focus on smallholder farmers in mid- and low-income countries in an effort to make sure that they, too, are participating in climate-smart practices. So the goal here, the idea, the thought was, we want everybody to be engaged. We want innovation to be advanced. America is providing leadership in this effort, in large part because of what we launched, our strategy for climate-smart agriculture. And a key component of that is what we recently announced with the Partnership for Climate-Smart Commodities. The theory behind this is pretty simple. The market is demanding to know where food comes from and how it's produced. They want to know, the consumers, when they he or she goes into the grocery store, that when they purchase an item, they're not hurting the environment, they're helping the environment. They're looking for opportunities to be supportive. They want us to be able to provide a sustainably produced food. So the market's sending a clear signal domestically and internationally. I can tell you that I was in Japan before I got this job again, and I was talking to a group of business owners who owned a large-scale department store in Japan. We were talking to them about American cheeses and the incredible array of cheeses and quality cheeses that are provided here in the U.S. And I went into great detail with what American dairy farmers are doing relative to climate-smart practices. I talked about the fact that they are one of our few dairy industries in the world that actually have embraced an animal welfare standard, one that's internationally certified. It's called the Farm Program, Farmers Assuring Responsible Management. I talked about the effort to get to net zero that the dairy industry had embraced. These individuals began to write feverishly in the book and the notebook that they had brought to the meeting. And I asked them, why were they interested? Why were they writing this down? They said, our consumers really want to know this. This is something that we can help market about American agriculture.
That's Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack speaking at the recent USDA Ag Outlook Forum held virtually from Washington, D.C. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report. If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
It's the Agribusiness Report. David Widmar with Agricultural Economic Insights.
We got to step back and realize these those measures can be impacted by quantity of exports, but also the value of those bushels and pounds of exports. So it's hard to really untangle how much of it's activity versus, you know, higher commodity prices. It's been a combination of both. But one of those key specifics that comes out of this big global picture, it has been China. And China purchased a record amount of ag goods from the United States in 2021. That story's been overshadowed by the Phase One trade agreement and China not meeting all those qualifications, including the ag purchase targets, but they've still purchased a record amount. So close to $36 billion in ag products. The previous record was actually back in 2013 at $29 billion. We almost got to $29 billion in 2020, but we fell short. And so we saw about a 25% increase in Chinese purchases year over year from 2020 to 2021. And of course, not all of that has been soybeans. And so soybean activity has been kind of, you know, par for the course, nothing to write home about. It's been a lot of other goods that they've purchased, including corn.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
United Ag is one of the largest association health plans to offer health care benefits for the agricultural industry. Their mission is to bring innovative health care solutions to agriculture by meeting their members' employee benefit needs. Join today and take advantage of the premier benefits offered by United Ag. United Ag is committed to contributing to a strong and healthy ag industry. For more information or to join, visit www.unitedag.org.
It's that time of year you've been waiting for. Commodity Classic is back, March 10th through 12th in New Orleans. Join the Sorghum Checkoff for a learning center session, finding the sweet spot, combining precision agriculture and conservation to build a sustainable and diverse farming landscape. Don't miss this cross-commodity, cross-sectoral collaboration with Pheasants and Quail Forever and Cotton Incorporated. Register online at CommodityClassic.com or listen to it live here. Sorghum, the smart choice.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Dr. Seth Meyer, Chief Economist at USDA.
You know, we've seen some large swings in both wholesale pork and beef prices, and those have transmitted into retail prices. Note here that this is an index, right? They're not price levels, they're indexes. So you see changes in the wholesale level tend to be muted at the retail level because there are other things in terms of cuts and packaging and retailing that go on between wholesale and retail pricing. But what you can see is that eventually wholesale prices make their way into retail, and eventually as wholesale prices decline, they make their way back out of retail and those prices come down. And so after we've seen some of these surges in wholesale prices, we've seen retail prices back off. And in some of the latest CPI reports, as we look at food price inflation, you'll notice some of the early price inflation for meat has begun to pull back a little bit, especially in things when you think about beef.